Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Did you know that in 1953, the Netherlands was devastated by flooding? It was there, Sandy. And after that flood, they implemented all kinds of prevention measures to make sure they wouldn't experience that kind of destruction again. And we ought to learn from their experience so that we're better prepared for the next Sandy here. That's the idea behind a New York One special report called Fighting the Tide by Josh Robin and Juan Manuel Benitez, who've just traveled to the Netherlands to see what they've done firsthand. Welcome back, Josh, Juan Manuel, to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
So you went to Amsterdam to try out the policy cafes. You want us to believe that, right?
I thought you were going to say something else that begins with P-O.
The dikes and levees broke during that 1953 storm. 1,836 people died is the number I have. The Dutch chose a long-term approach, which required lots of money, lots of imagination and sacrifice and time. No one has drowned there in a flood since. So, Josh, what did they do?
Well, they did a lot. They, you know, we should first start by saying that the Dutch have been doing this for a long time. The much of the country is below sea level. And in 53, they realized that they had not done enough. So it was lean years after World War II. They decided to spend a great deal of money. It totals in the billions and billions of dollars. I think probably the most obvious thing that they did is in the place where the flood happened, which is in the southern part of the Netherlands called the Zeeland province. And there they built this massive, massive sea barrier. It took a good 10 years to build and, you know, far more just to plan. And what it does essentially is it closes off the North Sea. It's all done by computer, and it closes off the North Sea when the tidal levels get too high. In addition to that, they've done more beach strengthening, that's what they call it. That's like building dunes, building berms, making sure that every granule of sand that's taken away from erosion, and they actually measure, you know, inch by inch, is replenished. And then, you know, you can go from there to some of the more creative things that they've started to do.
Some of the stats, as taken from your report, they built 350 miles of levees along the sea and an additional 2,000 miles of inland barriers over a 40-year period. Really, it's considered one of the seven wonders of the modern world. And Juan Manuel, what do you see as the parallels between there and here?
I think it's really interesting, and not only because you have a lot of elected officials, a lot of officials going to the Netherlands to see how we can copy some of their infrastructure, but also because now the Dutch, they went beyond that infrastructure phase. And now they really realized that they're not going to be able to fight the water all the time. So they are creating new ways to allow to flow the water in a controlled way, as long as you can anticipate where and how the water is going to come in. And I think that's really interesting for New York, also because we know the Mayor Bloomberg is not a big fan of this big barrier that we're talking about along Sandy Hook to the Rockaways. He says that you can't build a wall up to the sky. I think we need to think beyond that also, even though a protective measure like a barrier could make sense, but also how we're going to allow the flow of water to come into New York in a controlled way so it doesn't really wreak havoc like the last time.
Right. And New York City has 578 miles of coastline. About 10% of the city is in flood zones. In the Netherlands, a full third of the country is below sea level. So the parallels run out after a certain point. But still, there's a lot of similarity in those areas of New York City that would be affected. So as we head into this period of rebuilding, the $50 billion are coming into our region now, sequester aside, and we seem to be figuring out how the government will manage it. I want to play a clip from your series of Professor, you can pronounce his name for me, Jeroen Aerts.
Jeroen Aerts.
Thank you. Of the Institute for Environmental Studies there on his recommendations about how to regulate and manage this stuff.
One issue would be that there would be a sort of government institution responsible for water management issues. Now you have the EPA, and perhaps it would be good to have a sort of federal institution really dealing with water management institutions. And secondly, I think it is really important that people get educated in water, so that also in governments, eventually you have people who are aware and who can deal with this kind of issues.
And over there in the Netherlands, they have what they call, what he calls, the water boards. That's not the Dick Cheney kind of water boards. It's something else. But it's another level of their federal government. Josh, what do you make of this recommendation?
Well, I think they would... It would have to see how much power they would get. I mean, you know, you could have another layer of bureaucracy, but if it wouldn't really make sense if it's just going to create more delays. I mean, time is really of the essence here. The water levels are rising. Everyone has measured it. Any kind of trusted scientist will tell you that it's going to get worse and worse. I mean, under the worst case scenario, it could go up by the end of this century another 6 feet. So. I think it has to be – the most important thing probably is changing everyone's mentality when it comes to this. There in the Netherlands, as I said earlier, it's really in their DNA. They've been doing this for centuries. They've been worried about floods for centuries. Here it's something that we've just started to think about, and we got a rude wake-up call with Sandy.
And so it's about cultural attitudes as well. They really learned their lesson from that 1953 flood, and they make sure these water boards are fully funded. They're used to relying more on government in general than we are too, I think. So here's that same professor talking about their relationship with water.
A hate-love relationship. Sometimes we fear it, and especially not only in our own country, but when we see images like Sandy and Katrina, the Dutch are really with you guys in the U.S. On the other side, we love the water. We love swimming in the water. We love living near the water.
You like how I danced around his name by saying, here's that same professor again? So, Juan Manuel, do we not fear or love the water enough to take this as seriously as maybe we need to? For example, we talk about preparing for a 100-year flood. Their standard is a 1 in 10,000-year flood, you reported.
We are talking about a country where every single child learns how to swim really early, just in case they fall into a canal and so they don't drown. But it's really important to say about the earlier point. It's not only Professor Art saying that we need someone to coordinate all this. It's also in the commission report, the New York State 2100. We spoke also to Judith Roden, who is the president of the Rockefeller Foundation.
Appointed by Governor Cuomo to run one of these How Do We Go Forward commissions.
Correct. And she's saying, how is it that we don't have a chief risk officer here in New York when we are requesting Asian countries where we're doing some sort of work, infrastructure work, to have one of those people? And right now, the only person that is taking that role, temporarily at least, is Sean Donovan, the secretary of HUD at the federal level. But we really need, they say, someone to coordinate all these government officials, all these government agencies, because we have a complex also sort of government, and several funds are going to come from the federal government. Some of them could come from the state. So that person is really necessary.
Secretary Donovan also traveled to the Netherlands recently, didn't he?
Correct. He was there, even though he wanted to, when he was asked by New York One, he wanted to say that, well, yes, I've been to the Netherlands, but I've also been looking at other innovative ideas in other parts of the country and around the world.
So, Josh, what do you think is realistic on the table for us, having now seen how much of an investment and commitment a place like the Netherlands has made? Is it oyster beds off the Battery, revised building codes, porous sidewalks, sand dunes, storm surge barriers, a chain of man-made islands and gates, as some have proposed? What do you think is actually going to be on the table that's learnable from the Netherlands?
Well, I think everything is on the table as of now, especially after Mayor Bloomberg leaves office, because he's been the one who's been most vocal against the storm surge barrier. But as you get to the end of that list there, and you're talking about the bigger multi-billion dollar barriers and so forth, I think that will take a long time of studying. I think initially you're going to see, yes, you're going to have more oyster beds, probably the area that we also visited in Oakwood Beach. That's a section of Staten Island that was particularly hit. That reminded me of an area in the Netherlands, except that the one in the Netherlands had much greater protection. I think there you're going to see probably people leave. They're going to take the state buyout, which seems to be happening, and that area will be turned over to the natural marshland that existed before that probably should have stayed. Instead, obviously, there was construction and there was homes that was built there to deadly effect.
Josh Robin and Juan Manuel Benitez with us from New York One, and I should say New York One Noticias, the Spanish language all-news station on Time Warner Cable, with their special report, a series airing Fighting the Tide. It's also on their website.
ny1.com/fightingthetide.
And let's take a phone call, 212-433-WNYC. Chaim in NoHo, you're on the air. Hello, Chaim.
Hey, Brian, how you doing?
All right.
We've all of a sudden taken a very defensive stance here. We want to protect our infrastructure from the next storm. But I think many of us agree that the root cause is climate change and our very destructive energy policy. Can't we figure out a hybrid tidal wind energy installation, which, when necessary, will double as a floodgate, but over time pay for itself with sustainable energy?
Well, that's a good question, and I wonder, Juan Manuel, how they talk about this in the Netherlands. They've got this 1-in-10,000-year flood protection. Does that make them feel invulnerable to the additional sea level rise that might come from climate change, or because they're below sea level for so much of the country there, that they're out leading the charge, rah-rah, we have to prevent more global warming?
Well, not really. They realize, like we said during the last decade, that the infrastructure, big projects, they weren't going to be enough with the new theories of climate change. That's why they took it to, okay, let's bring the water in a controllable way. And that could be those mitigation and resilience measures could work really well, even as a middle point with two different positions that we've seen lately in government. Governor Cuomo saying, okay, we're going to buy your house if you leave, and we're going to turn that into a park, into marshland. And Mayor Bloomberg saying, no, we're not going to abandon our coastline. So many different visions agree that we could build new structures, new floating houses like the ones they have in the Netherlands. And really important also, Brian, that I want to say, because also tomorrow, Friday, and the special we're going to have in Pura Política, New York One Noticias, we're also going to have a roundtable discussion about how all these measures are going to affect communities of color, working class neighborhoods in New York, low income neighborhoods we're talking about also in many areas, that they're going to see how these areas are going to be see new development and how that's going to affect the way they live.
And in the context of the mayoral campaign, Josh, as Juan Manuel just pointed out, the governor and the mayor have different positions on this. The mayor is more focused on rapid repairs, not so much, you know, the bigger long-term reclaiming coastland kinds of things. I wonder how much of this will depend on who the next mayor is and what you think the right questions are that we both, as two people who are covering the mayor, as three people who are covering the mayoral race, be asking the candidates.
Well, I think we want to ask them how specifically specifically where they want to take flood prevention, what their ideas are, how they're going to pay for it. Certainly we don't have the money to pay for these kinds of huge barriers without sacrificing something somewhere else. The only person I've really heard talk at length about this has been the council speaker, Christine Quinn, who has been supportive of the barrier, who feels that – and she mentioned the Netherlands specifically – who feels that the Netherlands has become much more advanced than New York is, and it's time, frankly, for New York to catch up.
By the way, a lot of the resistance to building a seawall, Juan Manuel, is the cost, but also that it would ruin the experience of living on and going to the beach. You went to the beach in the Netherlands. Do they still have tourism on the beaches?
Yes. Well, you have to understand that this seawall is going to have floodgates. So they're going to close only when there's danger. So basically, the seawall is not going to stop the water from coming in at regular times. But I think going back to your question about the mayoral campaign, I think a really important question is the vision of the city for these mayoral contenders, how they see the city in the next 10, 20 years, knowing now after Sandy that even geographically the city is changing and we have to do something about it.
The retractable, you were talking about, it's almost like the retractable dome in a baseball stadium for when it's raining or when it's not, right?
Correct.
These retractable seawall gates so they can have the water coming onto the beach or not.
Correct. And remember, it's not only about the cost. It's also about the political will. It's really hard today to get money from the federal government or the state in those numbers. So we're talking about from $10 to $20 billion. It's not that much when we consider that Sandy cost the city almost $100 billion.
All right. We've been talking with Josh Robin and Juan Manuel Benitez about New York One's and New York One Noticias' special TV series, Fighting the Tide. The Spanish language version is called...
Contra Viento y Marea, Holanda y la Nueva Europa Sandy.
And we have a link to the web content on our show page. And when is this going to be back on TV?
It's airing every night. It begins at 7. And it's also, you can see, if you have Time Warner Cable, you can also see the actual TV clips on ny1.com/fightingthetide.
And really important, don't forget to read the excellent ebook that Josh Robin wrote that you can read on newyorkone.com, ny1.com.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks.